This is Market to Market producer Colleen Bradford Krantz. Stand by for the Market Analysis Podcast. Send us any questions or comments to markettomarket@iowapbs.org.
This is the Friday, July 3, 2020 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. USDA says 92 million acres were planted to corn this spring, down 5 million from the March intentions. The report gave the market a jolt in the trade-shortened holiday week. For the week, September wheat gained 16 cents, while the nearby corn contract skyrocketed 25 cents, despite a lower close Thursday. More acres turned to soybeans as the crop of choice, and hotter weather started to weigh on the trade. The August soybean contract improved 32 cents. August soybean meal added $11 per ton. December cotton increased $3.44 per hundredweight. In the dairy parlor, August Class 3 milk futures zoomed higher by 11% or $2.05. A green week in the livestock sector. August cattle jumped $4.02, August feeders advanced $3.30, and the August lean hog contract reversed the down cycle they've been on with a 92-cent gain. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index declined 11 ticks. August crude increased $2.12 per barrel. COMEX gold expanded $7.60 per ounce, and the Goldman Sachs commodity index improved 12 points to finish at 330.80. Joining us now to give us some insight is market analyst Elaine Cobb. Elaine, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Paul.
All right, so you're inside. You could be in a cornfield. It'd be about 95 degrees. We know that the temperature has all of a sudden become a major story in the corn market, but there was this other little tiny thing that happened. The USDA cut 5 million corn acres this year. A surprise to many. Was it a surprise to you?
I don't know. I always thought that 97 million acre number was the surprise or the really questionable number, the number that made you think we're not really going to be able to do that. So the 92 million acre number that we have now seems fairly reasonable. It's just very unusual for the USDA to make such a big change. And that's why the market was caught by surprise and why we did see corn prices go up 26 cents in 2 days. That's the kind of response you get to new changes in government numbers like that.
Well, farmers all of a sudden were cheering a government report. That doesn't happen very often. No, that's a snarky joke I saw this week on Twitter. I enjoyed. We do have a question that did come from social media, and you can always hit us up at Market to Market. And we love to hear from you. This one came from Miller Farm in Nebraska, Elaine. And this one, is there any concern that even with lower acreage and a possibly a lower than trend line yield, we could still have a very large carryout?
Oh, yes. So we saw this jump in corn prices here today or this week, but I don't want to say that that's the end of it, that it couldn't still, you know, continue to churn higher another 10 cents, another 15 cents. But I feel like everyone's bullishness needs to be tempered quite a bit, because let's think this through. If you drop that 5 million acres off of the supply and demand table, then you're lopping off 894 million bushels from the ending stocks. If you change absolutely nothing else, and it's really unlikely that we're not going to also be dropping demand, but let's just say that demand stays stable and all we do is lose those acres, you're still talking ending stocks numbers of 2.4 billion bushels. And that is enough. That is plenty. That's a 16% stocks to use ratio. And honestly, historically in the commodity markets, if you really want to see a rally, if you want to see grain prices start to go up, you need to have some kind of a shortage. The industry needs to feel that there's not going to be enough of it around. And I think right now this math, as the Twitter question was pointing out, shows that there will still be enough.
And the carryout was a question that did come up from people who looked at the acreages as one story. But the weather story becomes a little bit, we're in a small window here, maybe 10 days. Like I said, 95 for you. It's low 90s in Iowa. It's dry in Indiana. It's starting to dry out in Illinois. How long does this weather story last in corn?
Well, through the growing season, but the really interesting part is it's a three-day weekend, and you can absolutely get volatile reactions after you come back from a three-day weekend, because that's so much time for the weather models, the actual inputs to change. It's very possible that you could see a double-digit move when the market opens up Sunday night, Monday morning, one way or the other. I mean, it could be either rain showing up in places where it hadn't been before, or it could be an extreme, you know, extreme extension of that hot and dry weather that's affecting portions of Iowa and portions of Illinois and almost all of Indiana. So you've got all three of the I states in some kind of dry, hot concern for that corn just as it's starting to tassel.
And there's also a concern for the soybean crop in those same states that's mentioned. Are they more susceptible to weather right now? I mean, we know we're in pollination for corn, but what's the story in soybeans?
Right. You need another 2 weeks or so to your height of soybean production concern will follow corn a couple weeks later. But nevertheless, it's not great. Those pockets where it has been dry, you do see less development of the soybeans, and it's not ideal.
Okay. What are you doing right now when it comes to sales? I guess I should have followed up with you on corn. Are you making any sales of what you've got on hand, some of that old crop? And are you doing the same thing with soybeans? Are you getting rid of some old crop in both of these right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Sell into the rally and also ask yourself if you would have liked these prices back in February and March. You know, we had all of those could have been, would have been, should have been during April and May when the market was falling apart. And now we have received that gift of having those prices back. And even though they're not great, in a lot of cases, they will be profitable for efficient farmers. They might be just above the cost of production. So this is an opportunity.
And that November contract jumped. We already know that the Chinese have put intentions to buy in that. How much more upside does that November contract have?
You know, I don't think that we should feel very bullish about soybeans because, again, a lot of the news that came this past week in those government reports was not bullish for soybeans. We actually saw disappearance numbers were down 8% compared to a year ago. And the acreage numbers were actually higher, right, compared to last year. All of that, you know, makes sense given what the markets were during planting season. But there's not any big new bullish story that's going to continue to carry that market.
All right. Wheat-wise, we talk about weather. We look at Texas, Oklahoma, parts of Kansas extremely dry. A lot of the harvest is done in wheat in those areas. It's heading north, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota. It's rainy in some of these other parts. What's weighing on the wheat market right now?
Well, again, just what's always weighing on the wheat market is there's just too much of the stuff. You know, you've got a stocks-to-use ratio above 40%. In the United States and globally. So even though, yes, that High Plains region, you didn't mention Colorado. Colorado is really the hot spot where you get that D3 extreme drought. And that's where you see the really poor winter wheat ratings in the conditions report. Even though you do see that, and I know farmers would like to see prices respond upward when conditions are poor, but given the fact that there is so much wheat here and everywhere, it's going to be really hard, I think, for that Kansas City contract to get any momentum above that 420 level where it's kind of bouncing around.
Minneapolis did have a little bit of a rally this week. Is there any more legs to that?
Could be. And I think that's tied to some fund activity, which, you know, may not be very long term.
Okay. We were talking before the program. There's a connection here with wheat and cotton. And we did get a good cotton question from Jermaine. And he was just asking, Matt was asking, what do you foresee in the cotton market? He's doing my job for me. Thank you.
Well, you know, we have seen a very nice bounce in cotton, and I think it is tied to that drought that we were just talking about for wheat. So there's areas of cotton production, Missouri specifically, Oklahoma and Texas, where you are seeing the cotton condition ratings really start to fall while the plants are squaring. And so as we see prices rise, I think it could continue, you know, upwards toward the 72 cent level, but it may take some time and it will take continued drought through the rest of this summer.
If you look at the chart, which we have on the screen right now, Elaine, it is very tied to a pretty small region. This kind of broke out. Is there concern that that's going to reverse course and go back down on a technical standpoint, or is this more of a fundamental market with cotton?
Well, I think it's also partly tied to the recovery, the overall sort of V-shaped recovery or almost V-shaped recovery. In a lot of the commodity markets, once you got past the height of that COVID panic in the April-May timeframe, globally, you're talking about cotton production perhaps normalizing. So I'm mostly bullish for cotton, but you're right to point out that there are certainly other areas of cotton production in the United States, in the Southeast and in the Delta, where they do not have these production concerns.
And somebody's misfortune is another one's fortune. The dairy market, we're just throwing the format out the window this holiday weekend. Dairy, we've been watching this thing run. I think the run is it was at $14 on the 22nd of April when we closed the show that weekend. Since then, in 10 weeks, we've gone up almost $6. This week, $2 alone. What's going on?
Wow, yeah. Well, this is the trope that the cure for low commodity prices is low commodity prices. So because of those low prices, the government stepped in and started buying, and the co-ops themselves started to push back on production schedules. And that is all it takes to really tighten up that supply and demand scenario. But I do think there's a limit to how much more this can go. I mean, we're already in 2014 price levels. The high from 2014 is only a couple of dollars away from where we are now. So I would be surprised if that tighter supply and demand scenario hasn't already been priced in.
Okay. The cure for higher prices is higher prices, maybe in the live cattle market too. Starting to see some fall there. Is that a downward trend? It was up for the week, though.
Yeah, it was up for the week, and I think you're right. If you just look at a chart basis, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of momentum there for it to continue above that $100 level that we do see in the October contract. So, I mean, there's the expectation for triple digits here sometime. But if you think about it just sort of from a logical standpoint, yes, there is room for more of that bullishness in the beef sector overall to continue into the live cattle market. You know, you've got hamburger prices that are 15% higher than they were a year ago. All fresh beef, $7 a pound now versus $6 a pound a year ago. And the slaughter numbers are pretty much normal since mid-June. They've maintained a pretty normal 120,000 head per day. Yes, they're slower. Yes, the cost of preventing COVID-19 among slaughterhouse workers makes it more expensive for the slaughterhouses to be in operation. But nevertheless, it does feel like there's room for more of that profitability to continue to get passed back to the live cattle themselves.
Do you think that the fat cattle have moved through? We talked about this heavier amount. There was a report this week that maybe they are through the system, and that was part of the reason for a rally.
Probably those slaughter weights, the fats you're talking about, maybe. But the number of them, you know, the ones
right,
that went out on pasture, those probably still have to come through the system.
All right. On the feeder sides that are still in the pasture, there's a concern that maybe this part of the reason that the corn demand didn't get eaten through and we had a stronger carryout is because there's less corn being fed because we're trying to slow the weight of those feeders. Do you buy that theory?
Absolutely. I would be very surprised when that WASDE report comes out on, when is it, July 10th. You know, I would be very surprised if we don't see that feed and residual number have to come down below 6 billion bushels, because we did see evidence of that in the quarterly grain stocks. The disappearance of corn was down 20% from a year ago during that March to May timeframe. And that's not going to persist into the next few quarters. It was maybe just a one quarter off that it was going to be that far down. But nevertheless, yeah, that feed number is almost certainly going to be a bearish change to that WASDE table.
You got a strategy on feeders that you like right now, what you should be doing?
Well, I mean, so, you know, honestly, these prices are not terrible. When you look at sort of what an average was from 2016 onward, so put out of your mind those really fun prices from 2015 and just think of what would be normal over the past 4 years or so. We're just about there at 135 for October feeder cattle. This is not a terrible area to be locking in some prices if you see a bounce, if you sell into a rally.
Are you buying hogs right now?
You ought to be. I mean, it looks like the funds are. Honestly, they've turned neutral. They used to be pretty bearish on hog prices. But now that we've gone down to these prices and bounced up, what, maybe 6% from the April low, the funds have turned more neutral, and I think that that's fair.
So what are you doing here on a strategy? We're below 50 still. What do you do?
Well, I mean, I think the more interesting strategy is how many of these hogs you want to produce. And in last week's Hogs and Pigs report, you know, we saw a lot of shifting in the inventory, you know, the breeding herd going down and the farrowing intentions for the next couple of quarters certainly going down. And we also saw evidence of some of that euthanizing and culling of very small pigs. So even though you had farrowing numbers up a little bit, the actual number of small hogs under 50 pounds went down.
All right. We have to keep, we'll talk about hogs in Market Plus. Elaine, thank you so much. Good to see you. That will do it for this installment of Market to Market. We will talk more in Market Plus, so join us there. You can find it on our website at markettomarket.org. Now, there is an old saying, knee high by the 4th of July, and it happens this weekend. We want to see your farm's progress. Snap a pic on Saturday and tag them, hashtag knee high 4th. That's the number 4 TH on Twitter and Instagram, or post them on our comments section of our Facebook page. Join us again next week when we'll look at the weather's impact at a key time in the crop cycle. Thanks for watching. Have a great week.